Would the house come to order? Would the members please indicate their presence by voting? Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk take the roll?
33 members present.
We have a quorum present to conduct business. Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, Representatives Navarre and Collins are excused today. Representative Adams is excused to a plain time. Representative Cato is ill.
Our chaplain today is Reverend Art Knight. Would the members please rise for the invocation?
Lord, the challenge constantly before this house is to find ways to satisfy as many as possible of the real needs of the people of Alaska, to fulfill their desires when that is wise and possible, and to do these things with equity and justice. This has never been an easy task, not even when we enjoyed what appeared to be a flood of money, and the chief problem seemed to be to find ways to spend it. But the flood has been ebbing, and the challenge is different. While the money is less, the needs and the desires are not, and there is a new need for selectivity and wisdom. Sometimes there are many ways to accomplish any given objective, but some are more efficient or simply more acceptable than others. Some appear to offer a quick and painless fix, but are ultimately destructive of values and ways which we hold dear. We pray that you will give these men and women the eyes to see and the strength to act in ways ultimately beneficial to those they serve, and that you will help them to distribute both burden and benefit with equity. We ask for your presence in this house, your blessing upon those who serve within it, in your own holy name. Amen.
Representative Martin.
Mr. Speaker, I move that's unanimous consent to prayer be spread on the journal.
Are there any objections as having the prayer spread upon the journal? Hearing no objections, so ordered. Would the clerk at this time please certify the journal for the 93rd legislative day?
As chief clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 93rd day.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the journal for the 93rd day be approved as certified.
Are there any objections as to the correctness of the journal? Hearing no objection, the journal stands approved. Do we have any guests for introduction at this time? Representative Gull.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. It gives me great pleasure to introduce a group of students and their teachers here today from Edna Bay, a small community in southeast on Kosciuszko Island. With us, we have 6 junior high and 4 high school students, and I'd like to have them rise and be recognized. Their names are Josh Meathy, Eilertson, Jim Morgan, Bert Bergman, John Smart, Lisa Bartels, Rose Marie Smart, Barbara Morgan, Cindy Morgan, and Jay Smart. And with them is their teacher, Vernon Metcalf, and chaperones, Marietta Bergman, John Carpenter, and Teresa Ott. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Hurley.
In Gallery A today, we have several individuals who are here from the Family Community Leadership Co-op Extension Service, and I have one constituent, Representative Larson, and I have Joe Frisbee from Chickaloon in Gallery A.
Representative Larson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Also from that beautiful valley of the north, we have Dan Dryden with us from Sutton. Dan?
Representative Boucher.
Also here with the Family Community Leadership Co-op Extension Group, a good friend of mine, Linda Burgoyne from Anchorage.
Representative Kopanen.
Thank you. And with the Family Leadership Group, we have Winola Placenti from Fairbanks.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, also from that group with the Family Community Leadership Program, the Cooperative Extension Service from Anchorage, Doris Bates in Gallery A.
Representative Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Also from that group, from Bethel, we have Pat Barker. I'll be right back. I might say that I introduced him because Representative Binkley wasn't here today. I also have a friend from Fairbanks, Joyce Anderson in Gallery B.
Representative Maru.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. With the same program, the Family Community Leadership Cooperative Extension Service, we have three ladies here in Gallery A, all from Soldotna. They'll be shadowing me and Senator Fisher and Mike Navarre, if he's back tomorrow. They're Gloria Wise Carver, Neva Black, and Donna Wilcox.
Representative Sund.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It gives me a great deal of pleasure to introduce a friend of mine that I've met, the Chief Executive Director for the Western States Legislative Forestry Task Force, which is the combination of the six Western states and their forestry issues. And you had appointed Representative Davis and I to represent this body on that task force, Mr. Jim Corlett over here in Gallery B.
Do we have any further guests for introduction? How about a message from the governor?
Dear Representative Grusendorf, I have read the following resolution and signed the following bills and am transmitting the engrossed and enrolled copies to the Lieutenant Governor's office for permanent filing. House Concurrent Resolution Number 13 relating to the 19th Annual Boys State at Camp Carroll, Legislative Resolve Number 10. House Concurrent Resolution Number 14 relating to the 17th Annual Girls State at the Fairbanks University of Alaska Campus, Legislative Resolve Number 11. Committee Substitute for House Bill 64, Labor and Commerce, relating to Elevator Safety Standards, Chapter Number 10, SLA 1985. Committee Substitute for House Bill 115, Judiciary, relating to setting a venue by Supreme Court rule and providing for an effective date, Chapter Number 9, SLA 1985. Signed sincerely, Bill Sheffield, Governor. I have no further messages from the Governor, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the Senate.
The Senate has approved the following citations, and they are transmitted for consideration. Honoring Troy Bott by Senator DeVries, and honoring Mat-Su School District and Kathleen Schnick by Senators DeVries and Kurtula. And the following was approved and transmitted to enrolling, honoring the Yukon Quest.
Those citations that are not going to enrolling will be referred to rules for calendaring.
The Senate passed and returned House Bill 121, an act changing the name of the Division of Telecommunication Systems in the Department of Administration effective date, and this has been sent to enrolling. The Senate passed the following, and they are transmitted for consideration. Senate Bill 90 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, an act relating to the power of the Department of Commerce and Economic Development to administer appropriations for grants and providing for an effective date.
Two standing committees, Labor and Commerce and the Finance Committee.
Committee Substitute for for Senate Bill 190, Finance Amended by the Finance Committee, an act relating to the residential property tax exemption and tax equivalency and reimbursement payments and providing for an effective date.
Community and Regional Affairs and Finance Committee.
Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 207, Finance by the Finance Committee, an act relating to calculation of the cost of living and pay step differentials for the compensation and retirement benefits of certain public employees, classification system, limiting the state's power to change the cost to the state of compensation for certain positions, and providing for an effective date.
Two standing committees, State Affairs and Finance Committee.
I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Do we have any other communications or messages that should come before this body?
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of standing committees.
The Committee on Judiciary has had committee substitute for Senate Bill 28, Hess amended, training state employees and certain employees of the districts of the state public school system on the recognition and reporting of child abuse and neglect under consideration, recommends it do pass and attaches 2-0 fiscal notes. The report was signed by M.M. Miller, Chairman, concurred in by M.M. Miller, Clocks and Son, Grunberg and Phillips. Taylor has no recommendation. Senate Bill 28 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Committee on Judiciary has had House Bill 172 relating to the rights of blind, hearing impaired, disabled, and physically handicapped persons under consideration, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 172 Judiciary with a new title, and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by M.M. Miller, Chairman, concurred in by Sun, Grunberg, Taylor, Phillips, M.M. Miller. Signing no recommendation, Pettijohn. House Bill 172 has no further referral. The Committee on Finance has had House Bill 294, Preferential Hire of Alaskans, under consideration and recommends it do pass and attaches a new fiscal note. The report was signed by Ringstad Vice Chairman, concurring Ringstad, Zemanski, Duncan, Larson, Porchot, Euling, Rieger, Frank, and Cotton. House Bill 294 has no further referral. The Committee on Finance is at House Bill 295, making a special appropriation to the Department of Labor for study of unemployment in Alaska and other issues related to Alaska Hire, under consideration, recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Ringstad Vice Chairman, concurring Ringstad, Szymanski, Duncan, Larson, Porchot, Ewling, Frank, Cotton, and Binkley. Having no recommendation, Rieger. House Bill 295 has no further referral. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Under the daily order of business, this brings us to special committee reports.
The House Special Committee on Fisheries has had House Joint Resolution 33 relating to support for the first onshore commercial production of surimi by the Alaska seafood industry under consideration and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Gall Chairman, signing do pass, Jenkins, Binkley, Thompson, and Gall. Having no recommendation, Maru. House Joint Resolution number 33 has no further referral. I have no further special committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of citations and resolutions.
Citation honoring Spirit Days 1985, Cook Inlet Native Association 21st Anniversary by Representative Szymanski. Citation honoring 1985 Bristol Bay Youth Conference by Representative Herman and Senator Zharoff.
These citations will be referred to rules for calendaring.
I have no resolutions for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction, first reading, and reference of House bills.
House Bill 382 by Duncan and M.A. Miller, an act relating to accelerated normal retirement for state employees in the public employees retirement system and providing for an effective date.
State Affairs and Finance Committee.
House Bill 383 by Szymanski, an act relating to the recoupment conveyance for land at Illinois Creek and providing for an effective date.
Resources and Finance Committee.
House Bill 384 with a transmittal letter and a fiscal note. By the Rules Committee, by request of the Governor, an act relating to relocation assistance and real property acquisition practices and providing for an effective date.
State Affairs, Judiciary, and the Finance Committee.
House Bill 385 by Thompson, an act relating to liability for damage caused by domestic animals and providing for an effective date.
Resources and the Judiciary Committee.
I have no further bills for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us to the consideration of the daily calendar. Would the clerk please read the first item on today's calendar?
House Bill number 126 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, an act amending the Alaska Securities Act. The Committee on Labor and Commerce has had House Bill 126 under consideration, recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Navarre Chairman, concurring by Navarre, Copen, and Hanley, Pierce, Collins, and Davis. The Committee on Judiciary has had the bill under consideration, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 126 Judiciary with the same title, and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by M.M. Miller, Chairman, concurring by M.M. Miller, Phillips, Pettijohn, Taylor, and Grunberg. The Committee on Finance has had the bill under consideration and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 126 Judiciary and that it do pass and attaches a new fiscal note. The report was signed by Adams, Chairman, signing do pass, Adams, Duncan, Larson, Ewling, Rieger, Frank, and Cotton. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill 126 be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Are there any objections to the adoption of the Judiciary Committee substitute?
We're having at ease, Mr. Speaker.
Would the House please stand at ease? Would the House please come back to order? Before the recess, we had the motion before us to adopt the committee substitute judiciary. Are there objections to the adoption of the committee substitute? Hearing no objections, the committee substitute has been adopted. Do we have any further amendments on our desk?
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill 126 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Are there any objections to the advancement from second to third reading? Hearing no objections, would the clerk please read the bill for the third time?
Committee substitute for House Bill 126 Judiciary by the Judiciary Committee, an act amending the Alaska Securities Act.
Is there any debate? Representative Ewling.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A question to the co-chairman of the Finance Committee. I see we have a $92,000 fiscal note on the bill that's before us, and I see it also carries forward for the next 5 years, and I don't recall exactly what that exactly went for, if that was enforcement or if that was for a new position. Maybe you could be more specific. Explain that, please.
Representative Davis.
I don't have the answer to the question, but he asked for the question to the co-chairman of finance. Is that who he asked for the question? And I'm not sure who that is.
That is absolutely correct, Representative Davis. And I know who the co-chair is. Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, I'm not the co-chair of finance, although I'll do that in my spare time if you'd like. But I do happen to have the answer to the question. The fiscal notes from the two affected departments indicate costs of $45,000 for the Department of Commerce for a position to handle registration activities that are required, and a budget of some $47,000 annually to the Department of Law to provide some outside travel and contractual fees to outside counselors and court reporters for investigation. The revised fiscal note from the Finance Committee simply combined the two departmental fiscal notes and put all the funds into the Department of Commerce with legal expenses to be RSA to the Department of Law. The potential savings to Alaskans and to the Alaskans economy could well and undoubtedly will exceed this amount. We're talking about scam operators that testimony and Judiciary Committee indicated are making, and this is an incredible figure to me, as much as $18 million a month scamming the people in selling phony Alaska oil stocks. And I think this is a fairly modest amount to put some brakes on that type of scam.
Any further debate? Representative Maru.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I believe the prior speaker is Chairman of Judiciary, and I have a question, I believe, addressed to Chairman of Judiciary. The governor's transmittal letter, page 156 of the House Journal, says that the state would be able, with this bill, to take legal action against those out-of-state sellers of Alaska mineral rights. And I just wonder if we're stretching the point here, and if the defrauded people are outsiders living in Iowa, let's say, and if the sellers are also outside living in California, let's say, are we stretching the point in trying to protect people who live in another state from fraudulent practices which are practiced in another state? Also, I would have a question here. It seems to be what we're going to try to do, because the fiscal note analysis says that it is expected that at a minimum 5 trips outside Alaska will be necessary to enforce registration of Alaskan sales of oil, gas, or mineral leases outside Alaska. So I just wonder if we're really stretching the point and getting involved in activities which are occurring outside between people in other states.
Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. With response to the first question from the representative from Homer, the testimony before the committee and the general problem that this addresses is a problem that's becoming increasingly important both in Alaska and outside, that people are using, for example, Alaskan oil and gas and mineral leases, and they're using corporations and real property and things in various states to entice investment from people in one state into one of these entities in another state, and fraudulently dealing with them and taking their money. It's a big interstate problem, and Alaska is just now coming into this particular arena. For example, in testimony before the Judiciary Committee, we were given a copy of a brochure that was presented on an oil and gas lease. And the brochure went so far as to indicate that, or to imply that the state of Alaska and the governor endorsed this particular fraudulent scheme. It was a really, I wish I had a copy of it, an amazing document. And this is just one kind of thing that we're faced with. And with respect to the fiscal question asked by my friend from Homer, I'm not on the Finance Committee. That question didn't come up in the Judiciary Committee. I can see how trips outside would be necessary to deal with these people who largely are outsiders, but I'll defer on that testimony to the Finance.
Representative Ewling.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If I could possibly answer the question from the member from the Kenai. The testimony before the Finance Committee indicated that there would be necessary information that would have to be gained from going outside and preparing cease and desist orders or possible court actions in other states. Also maintain data entry, file investigation and reports and so on and other things, which would take place out of the state of Alaska. However, the problems that we're running into, as it was my understanding before the Finance Committee, was that we obviously couldn't have any jurisdiction in the other 49 states, and that we would just have to do these cease and desist orders there and get along with it and see what we could do.
Any further debate? Representative Pinyalberry.
Speaker, in light of our declining revenue, I just have to wonder if we're analyzing these bills as completely as we ought to be. The original intention, as I understood it, was that we did not have the legal machinery in place to catch and prosecute these people who are perpetrating these scams for bogus oil leases in Alaska. So the idea was to rewrite the statute so that we would have the necessary legal machinery in place. It was never presented that we didn't have the people within our bureaucracy to do the enforcement and follow-up. This is not really a new job for the Department of Commerce, the Division of Banking Securities. They're supposed to have been doing this work all along. We gave them, with this bill, a stronger tool with which to do their job. And so now we come back with a fiscal note that adds another body to the state payroll. I just don't think that was necessary, and we ought to be looking at these additional expenditures in light of the real intent of what we were trying to do. And perhaps someone from the Finance Committee could tell me if this came up in Finance.
Representative Duncan.
May we have it at ease, please?
Would the House please stand at ease? Will the House please come back to order? Committee substitute for House Bill 126, Judiciary, is before us in third reading. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, a couple of questions have come up that people are obtaining the answers to, and while we wait for that information to come down to us, I move and ask unanimous consent that House Bill 126 be placed at the bottom of today's calendar.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, so ordered. Would the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
House Bill 141 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, an act relating to the parole of offenders and providing for an effective date. The Committee on Hess has had the bill under consideration and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 141 Hess with the same title and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by the co-chairmen, Kopanen and Grunberg. Signing do pass, Grunberg, Hurley, and Kopanen. Signing no recommendation, Taylor and Hanley. The Committee on Judiciary has had the bill under consideration and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 141 Judiciary with a new title and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by M.M. Miller, Chairman, concurring by M.M. Miller, Phillips, Pettijohn, Grunberg, and having no recommendation, Clarkson. I have two committee substitutes on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill 141 be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Are there any objections to the adoption of the Judiciary Committee substitute? Hearing none, the committee substitute has been adopted. Do we have any further amendments upon our desk?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. Amendment number 1 by Pettijohn. Page 5, line 21. Delete 1/4, insert 1/3.
Representative Pettijohn.
I move the amendment, Mr. Speaker.
Hearing objections, proceed, Representative Pettijohn.
Mr. Speaker, the present law that the parole board operates under requires that a prisoner serve a third of his sentence before he can be paroled. This bill, as it's written, would change that to 1/4, and I would like to see it remain as it is right now at 1/3 for several reasons. We've had the present system of 1/3 required for eligibility for quite a few years now, and the judges around the state, I believe, take that into account, or have taken it into account, when they are sentencing someone. So that for the past, I think, 5 years at least, a judge who, say, is sentencing someone to a term of imprisonment bears in mind at the time of his sentencing that this individual will have to serve 1/3 of that sentence before they can be paroled. To reduce it now to 1/4, I think, would be unfortunate in that the intent of the sentencing judge, who, after all, knows more about the crime and the criminal than anybody else, would be subverted to a certain extent. And I don't see any justification for this. The only justification, really, I suppose, is, or the major justification, at least, is that the Department of Corrections just likes to get rid of more prisoners. And I object to that.
just as a matter of public policy, it's for each member to decide on his own whether or not it's a good idea, for a variety of reasons, that a prisoner do at least one-third of his time before the parole board can put him out on the street. If a person is given a sentence of 6 years for a crime, I don't think it's unreasonable, and I don't think the public that I represent in my district thinks it's unreasonable for the state to require him to at least serve 2 years before he gets out. If you you read in the paper, a judge is really going to hammer a guy, he's going to give him 20 years. Well, if the fact is that he's out on the street after after five, as this bill would do unamended, I think that sort of weakens the whole public concept of the criminal justice system and giving people their just desserts. And I served on a parole board for 2 years, as most of you know, and we operated under the one-third system. It worked fine, and I don't see any necessity at all to change this. The reason it was adopted at one-third originally is because prior parole boards years and years ago were just setting people out on the street. You know, they get a 20-year term, and they'd be out after a year. And the public's confidence in the justice system was eroding. And I think the one-third provision is an appropriate one, and I urge you to vote for the amendment. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Any further debate? Representative Miller.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I certainly respect the view of the prior speaker, and this is a judgment call, but I think we should come down on the one-fourth side, and I'll say it for this reason, Mr. Speaker. First of all, please understand that we're only talking about a small percentage of the prisoners that are currently occupying cells in Alaska. All of the people who are presumptively sentenced are not eligible for this sort of parole anyway. So that half, that 50% of the prison population, wouldn't even come under it. In addition, we're only talking about the prisoners who have been sentenced, for the most part, for B and C felonies, for instance. We're not talking about any persons that are sentenced even first time for major offenses, violent offenses, murder, kidnapping, that sort of thing. So we're only talking about actually about 20% is the estimate I've been given by the people who are responsible for that. We're only talking about 20% of the people who are in the prison population as being even eligible for this feature. For the rest, it either remains at one-third, which would be the case for the first-time murder, kidnapping, that sort of thing, or in the case of the presumptive sentence people, they don't get consideration under it at all. So we're only talking about 20%. Of the 20% we're talking about, you can reduce that further because a bunch of those people are going to be real bad types that are not even going to be eligible to apply for parole because they might be eligible to apply, but there's just absolutely no chance the parole board is going to look at what they've done in prison. They, you know, kicked a guard, they tried to escape, they tried to, you know, any number of things that gets them in trouble. And the parole board is going to say, no, absolutely not. So we're only talking about a fairly small number of people, and that small number of people represent what, I guess in my mind, are probably the best risks in the prison system right now. Of course, you have to understand that for anybody on parole, there's an element of risk. We have hoped that they'll have learned their lesson. We'll have hoped that they, you know, will leave the life of crime that they started. But for the most part, these are first-time sentenced persons, and the overwhelming percent do learn their lesson. Now, our parole board, unlike several years back, which certainly preceded the representative's time on the board, our parole board does enjoy a high degree of public confidence, I think, right now, because they're a tough board. The recidivism rate of people on parole committing felonies, for instance, is about 4%, which is one of the best in the nation. So that tells me, at least, that if we open up this window of a little bit by going from having to serve one-third down to only having to serve one-fourth, if we open up that window just a little bit, this tough board of ours will continue the scrutiny that they currently employ, and that they will continue to have what I think is a highly, highly successful rate. The benefit from that
are several. Number one, if the person really has learned his lesson or her lesson, that person is out on the street earning their own keep at a legitimate job instead of being housed at a cost of whatever the figure is, $80 to $90 a day in our prison system. And in addition, it does free up a few beds. Now, really, since I described this as only affecting a small percentage of the people, that means as far as freeing up beds, that's also relatively small, and I recognize that. But to the extent that we free up any beds by people who are determined by a tough parole board to be good risks, I think that's a plus. So I think for this small group of people that are in there and that would be eligible under the conditions of the committee of substitute, I think we can say that one-fourth instead of one-third, on balance, pro and con, and there are arguments on both sides, but on balance, pro and con, I think, at least in my mind, the best public good falls on letting this small number of people eligible, not granted, eligible for parole. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I ask you to vote against the amendment.
Any further debate on amendment number one? Representative Martin.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I kind of, as an avid citizen, find that the amendment has good merit. Probably more than anything else, it has consistency to it. The members might note on line 27 that we talk about one-third of the imposed sentence. And as the gentleman said before, it depends on what kind of a felony you committed or what kind of crime you committed. And it seems to me that the court systems are confused enough by legislators being inconsistent in their direction, whether it be preventive sentencing or who gets off when and who has parole when. I think it also, by consistency, would act as a easy mathematical way for the prisoners, for their lawyers, and for perhaps would-be criminals, not trying to guess what game they'll play, whether it be an A felony, a B felony, a C felony, or whatever, and how the defense attorneys could get them off to a lesser charge with the understanding that you only had to serve one-fourth of your sentence. It seems to me that it's a good, concise amendment, one-third in any case of these particular crimes in this category. I also wonder about the fiscal note, which is zero. We know darn well that it's going to be more demand by those 20% of current prisoners who will demand a hearing and another hearing and another hearing because of the one-fourth availability of a sentence rather than one-third. We already heard in the past, and I think that we've increased the parole board to try to solve the current demands on them in the normal appeal for prisoners of one-third. Now, if we have a select group of 20% being available for one-fourth of their term, it's going to increase demands, and I think the fiscal note should not be zero, but should be adjusted accordingly.
Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to have to speak against the amendment, and I say that with some reluctance. I debated this thoroughly with Representative Pettijohn and the other members of the Judiciary Committee during hearings. I then reserved and was concerned about it. The bill was held for a while, at which time I contacted several members of the judiciary concerning their feelings on this change. Their concerns primarily were that they be given a greater opportunity to participate in the parole-making decision. We provided for that at the bottom of page 6, if you'll look on line 23. The court will now receive, in all cases, if the judge so requests, And in those cases, you have to believe that the judge has a concern about it, and he is called upon to deliver his comments to the parole board. The parole board has indicated to us that they look very, very strongly upon the judge's concerns and comments. He will now be informed of all of the history of that prisoner during his time in incarceration, plus the judge, of course, has all of the pre-sentence comments and knows why he made the decision. And as a consequence, there is now going to be a greater flow of information between the judiciary and the parole board in making their decisions. In addition to that, the judiciary has had throughout this period of time and still retains the discretion on sentencing to indicate that the prisoner shall not be available for parole or probation for a given period of his term of imprisonment. As a consequence, the judge, by his very order, can specify the actual amount of time that must be served by the prisoner before he is eligible for consideration by the parole board. The representative from Juneau, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, has indicated that this bill will only affect a very limited number within our prison population, and that limited number is made up of probably the least dangerous of all of the offenders within the prison population. As a consequence, I feel that it brings the parole board into compliance with and into conformity with the entire package of legislation presently moving through this body to restructure our correctional system. As Commissioner Endell has informed many committees within this body, we either have to slow down the number of people coming into our prisons, speed up the number going out, or build a whole bunch more prisons. We're looking at tremendous costs of almost $250,000 per bed to build new prison facilities. We're looking at horrible operating expenditures where we're spending, as Representative from Juneau indicated, huge amounts per day to house these people. These are the least dangerous of the offenders. They are offenders that the judges have authority and will continue to have authority to limit their ability to apply for parole on the original sentencing. And they are offenders that the judges will be called upon to give their comments on before that person is granted parole. I believe there's more than adequate safeguards presently built in the system, and I think that the significant amendments that were made to this bill as it moved through the committee process can further assure the citizenry of Alaska that they have no additional needs to be concerned or worried about this process. It should also be remembered by the body that parole and probation still involves a tremendous degree of supervision, and that that supervision through our corrections department is a very tight supervision as compared with many states. And as a consequence, as the representative from Juneau indicated, there is a good track record over the last several years upon which to base this decision. And though it does open the doors a little early, we're only talking, if you really figure out the numbers, 8 1/3% earlier for many of these offenders, that that is not such a significant difference that the judiciary has not previously considered it, will not be considering it in the future, and it is not something that the public need to start locking their doors at night about. Thank you.
Any further debate on Amendment Number 1? Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise to speak against the amendment, and I do so for not philosophical reasons, but rather practical reasons. Let's talk about dollars and cents. The reason this is being requested is because there isn't sufficient funding for the correctional system to keep prisoners behind bars for extended periods of time. If those of you who are troubled by this situation, I suggest you take a closer look at the budget of the correctional system. There will be a follow-up bill to this one dealing with good time. We must be consistent with these bills. But the practical matter of this is the dollars and cents, not the philosophical matter, and that I urge you to consider when voting on this amendment.
Are you ready for the question?
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Gull.
Thank you. Before we vote, could we have just a very brief at ease, please?
The House, please stand at ease. The House will come back to order. We are on Amendment Number 1. Are you ready for the question? Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The gentleman that previously spoke had a very good point that we're talking dollars and cents and who are the one that will pay the bill. If we're talking about dollars and cents, let's look at the victim. How much is it costing the victim that's been robbed? How much is it costing the victim whose house or cars or personal property had been vandalized? How much is it costing the victim who has been mugged for whatever reasons? He talks about the cost of our prisons, and certainly that is a justifiable thing to think about today. $250,000 per bed is almost outrageous. It's probably 3 to 4 times more than any other state, because in this state, we have some kind of an idea that a prison should be a palace. In this state, there is no doubt that the greatest security you would ever desire in this world is to get yourself locked up at Eagle River, at some of our other real nice prisons. They have a medical program that is unbelievable for anyone that goes to prison.
everything that you may have had wrong with you, even think you had wrong with you, will be taken care of in prison. If you're tired of life, you do something small. Get locked up for 3 months, 4 months. What a great society. What a great way to get away from a society, the burdens of the state, the burden of providing for your family, the burden of providing for employment. No, I don't think that's a justifiable cause to say that we're going to release somebody early because of the cost of imprisonment. The justifiable cause is that we're going to keep them in there longer so they will think of their crimes and maybe not victimize someone else. The cost to the victim in court, to, in most cases, fighting for a principal and saying they were wronged and they had to pay the cost. The cost for a victim that had been mugged and they had to pay for rehabilitation. Society don't take care of them. They take care of the prisoners. And it had been determined in some state, perhaps not in this state, that when you keep prisoners in jail a little longer, crime does decrease. Thank you.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall Amendment Number 1 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? The clerk may tally the board.
17 yeas, 17 nays.
Amendment Number 1 has failed adoption. Representative Furness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. After that squeaker, could we return to introduction of the guests, please?
Are there any objections? Proceed, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In Gallery A, it gives me a great deal of pleasure to reintroduce to this body a young lady who was very familiar to many of you in finance last year. She's a former Deputy Commissioner of Administration in Gallery A, Eleanor Andrews. Also, Mr. Speaker, visiting with Mrs. Andrews today is her mother and father from Compton, California, Tuck and Muriel Poole. Please join me in welcoming Mr. and Mrs. Poole.
Committee substitute for House Bill 141, Judiciary, is still before us in second reading. We do have another amendment. But Amendment Number 2 has been withdrawn, so Amendment Number 3 in your desk will be Amendment Number 2. Would the clerk please read that amendment?
Amendment number 2 by Furness, page 10, line 2, new section, add 18. Refrain from processing or consuming a controlled, refrain from possessing or consuming a controlled substance without a doctor's prescription.
Representative Furness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the amendment and ask unanimous consent.
Hearing objections, okay. Representative.
Mr. Speaker, I'm somewhat surprised at that objection. I make note that in some of the material that I've been reading, the Hess Committee deleted this provision from one of the original bills. I draw the members' attention to page 9. We have included language in the bill making it against a parole or at least a violation for a member to consume alcohol or to visit an establishment that sells alcoholic beverages. Mr. Speaker, I believe that by eliminating this amendment in this bill, it becomes permissive. And that is, we are saying it's okay if one consumes or in the possession of a controlled substance. Mr. Speaker, I think we need to send a signal, and the proper signal is to put the language in the bill stating that they should refrain from possession or consuming a controlled substance. It fits very well in this legislation, and I would ask the body's support.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, this subject was discussed in detail in the Judiciary Committee. The language was taken out there because it is currently a violation of law to do it. If you want to put all the criminal laws in as conditions of parole, you may want to do it, but it would be extremely bulky. It is currently a violation of the law to possess a controlled substance without a prescription. It took us 40 pages or so of legislation a couple of years ago to do that, and it is not necessary to put it in here. And my memory is that the Department of Corrections concurred in that.
Representative Cotton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. At first glance, I thought it might be a
a meritorious amendment, but as I read the rest of the language, it says the board may require as a condition of discretionary or mandatory parole that a prisoner released on parole, then there's a list. And number 11 says that the board may require that person to submit to periodic tests to detect the use of alcohol or controlled substance. So I think that the board can tell that person he has to come in and take whatever tests are required to detect that substance. And then, as the majority leader pointed out, if he is in possession of that substance, it's against the law. So I don't really believe that we need this amendment. It's either a straw man or a red herring. I'm not sure which one it is.
Is there any further debate? Representative Furness?
Mr. Speaker, I acknowledge that it is against the law to have a controlled substance. However, Mr. Speaker, since we have in the legislation that a person is to be subjected to a periodic examination, it makes sense to include in this bill, to reaffirm that a person is not to have on their possession at any time a controlled substance without a doctor's prescription. The member of the majority leader, in my opinion, did not satisfy the need to not include this information.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, my prior explanation stands. In addition, if this amendment were adopted, it would give to the probation or parole officer the authority to waive this condition, so it doesn't make much sense at all.
Representative Gruenberg.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I would point out to the maker of the amendment the language on page 8, lines 19 through 22. As a condition of parole, a prisoner released on discretionary or mandatory parole shall refrain from conduct punishable by imprisonment under state or federal law or municipal ordinance. The commentary, I refer the body to page 5 of the commentary of AS 33.16.150, says the prohibition against violating any law is a required condition for all parolees. We didn't just put one provision that they could submit to tests. There are two in here, both items 10 and item 11 on page 9. Item 10 says submit to appropriate controlled substance examination, treatment, or counseling. Number 11 is submit to periodic examinations designed to detect the use of controlled substances. These are enforcement mechanisms, making sure that it's clearly within the legislative intent, not only that you could be prohibited, but that you could be required to ensure compliance with the prohibition against violating the Controlled Substance Act.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall Amendment Number 2 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Clerk may take the roll.
7 yeas, 30 nays.
Amendment number 2 has failed adoption. Would the clerk please read the next amendment on our desk?
Amendment number 3 by Furness. Page 2, line 26. Add after compensation of $150 for each day the member is participating in business of the board. Delete at an amount to be set by the governor.
Representative Furness.
Well, Mr. Speaker, we'll try again. Mr. Speaker, I move the amendment and ask unanimous consent.
Hearing objections, proceed, Representative Furness.
Mr. Speaker, the reason for introducing this amendment, I note again in the supportive information that currently the board is being paid $150 per day in addition to per diem. I note also, Mr. Speaker, that this bill supposedly has a zero fiscal note, and I'm concerned here that by giving the governor the discretion of setting the amount to be paid the board, that we're encouraging a system of variable compensation for the various boards and commissions throughout state government. It appears reasonable here, Mr. Speaker, for the sake of fiscal responsibility and budgetary control, that we ought to state specifically as to what that compensation is to be. I note that we have at least started this system down this path. I believe the railroad board members are paid some $400 a day. I believe the Alaska Housing Authority, at least the Finance Housing Authority, is paid a considerable amount of monies per day. I think this is a prudent amendment, Mr. Speaker, and I would move its adoption.
Any further debate on Amendment Number 3? Representative Maru.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Could we stand at ease for a moment?
The House, please stand at ease. Will the House please come back to order? We have before us Amendment Number 3. Representative Furness.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to make just a brief technical change. For clarity's sake, in my amendment, I've included the supporting language that would read for each day the member is participating. That language is already in the bill. The amendment is $150 and to delete the amount set by the governor, just for clarity of it.
The clerk has that amendment on her desk.
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I speak in opposition to the amendment. I think it makes sense to leave this to the discretion of the governor so that we don't just always forever have to be sitting down trying to figure out how much we're going to pay each board to take care of the cost of living. 20 years ago, this figure, I think, was $60. Some years back, it got up to 100. Maybe it's 150 right now. If inflation continues, maybe sometime in the future, although the way the oil prices are declining, I doubt if this is going to happen, but maybe sometime in the future, it ought to be raised. And the authority is there for the governor, to do that, if in his best judgment it makes sense. But he can only do that if this body, meaning the total legislature, appropriates enough money for him to do that. He's certainly not going to just decide that he wants to give an early Christmas present to these people and give them a whole bunch of extra money, just because he likes them. He's only going to do it if, number one, there's good reason to do it, and number two, we have appropriated enough money to do it. So, to me, this is a far better way to handle it. Otherwise, every several years, whenever these things go up, we have to either do it or not do it, and talk about a variable, a variable rate for the different boards and commissions. And that itself isn't bad, by the way, Mr. Speaker. A lot of boards and commissions get zero, and that's exactly what they should get, is zero. Other boards and commissions, because of the nature of their thing, get a little bit. Some get a little bit more. Some get... The member mentioned the railroad. Somebody gets 400. That's the first time I had heard that, and I think it's kind of outrageous, but that's beside the point. Apparently, we authorize that. But I think we have the mechanism right here to take care of an increase if it's merited, but again, only if this body appropriates enough money to do it.
Representative Ewing.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This looks like a pretty good amendment here. I think in a lot of other laws that we've dealt with, we've actually set a fee as far as the per diem and travel expenses, and this $150 would put a limit on it. Constantly I see the responsibility and the powers of the legislature being eroded away to the administration. This is one way where we can actually control it, and I think it's good to set a limit on it, and it's a pretty good amendment. Thanks.
I'm ready for Representative Hurley.
Oppose this amendment. I believe I spoke to this when this bill was in Hess also, and the reason that I think it should be set by the governor is that there are many bills, many boards in the state that do work as equally valuable or more valuable. For instance, the State Board of Education meets several days each month, and they do not get paid at all. They get their per diem and travel, and that's it. And I feel that it would be a better policy for us to have setting some standards for paying other boards rather than having this figure in this bill.
Question. Are you ready for the question? Right. Representative Furness.
Mr. Speaker, one last comment. The rationale for this amendment, Mr. Speaker, is, again, to control this expenditure. We've already acknowledged that we have started a path of paying boards and commissions. I mentioned the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. I believe they're paid in excess of $200 a day, and the Railroad Board at some $400 a day. We find now that the Parole Board currently is paid $150 a day. Mr. Speaker, I'm reminded of the fact that the Board of Fisheries this year spent some 3 months continuously in hearings around this state, and those men and women served for per diem only. In my opinion, that's unfair. But, Mr. Speaker, to give a blank check to anyone within our system to set that figure at their discretion does not serve the system well. I believe that at some point we should go back and look at these boards and commission and adequately compensate them. But in this particular instance, we know that we're paying these people $150. It makes good sense, Mr. Speaker, that we go ahead and cap that off at the $150, and perhaps in future legislation we go through and look and make a rational determination as to what boards and what commission deserve additional monies in compensation in addition to the per diem.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall amendment number 3 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Will the clerk please tally the board?
15 yeas, 22 nays.
Amendment number 3 has failed adoption. Do we have any further amendments before this body?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Clark.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill 141 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Are there any objections to the advancement from second to third reading? Hearing none, would the clerk please read the bill for the third time?
Committee substitute for House Bill 141, Judiciary, by the Judiciary Committee. An act relating to the parole of offenders, amending the sunset date for the parole board, and providing for an effective date.
Is there any debate? Are you ready for the question? Representative Furness.
Mr. Speaker, I had a couple of questions on the bill. I draw the body's attention to page 8, line 4 through 11. Mr. Speaker, this section deals with the board's determination of a suitability of discretionary parole, and it speaks that in their deliberation that they are to furnish the prisoner a copy of all of the pre-parole reports and whatever. It also mentions here that the prisoner may respond in writing and be present. My question, Mr. Speaker, to the Judiciary Chairman is, is it necessary for the prisoner to be there in person, or can that deliberation take place over teleconference?
Representative Miller.
The question even came up. Until we pass the teleconference bill that's before us, and I'd have to look at see if Stephen covered then, I don't think there's been any discussion of a teleconference. Mr. Pettijohn, of course, used to be on the parole board, and he could tell me if that was ever teleconference to his experience, but I think no. I think the board always meets eyeball to eyeball, across the table.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I have...
Representative Furness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have an amendment to expand it to teleconference, but I doubt seriously if I could get support, so... Perhaps in the next body we can get them to take a good look at that. I do have one additional question, Mr. Speaker, and this really is for my own information. I noticed on page 9, line 13, I'll take it back at line 20, item 13, that the parolee must refrain from opening, maintaining, or using a checking account or charge cards. I'd like to know the rationale for this statement in the bill.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, it's not an outright prohibition. It's that the board may require as a condition that the person not maintain a checking account. He may have been in jail for defrauding by writing bad checks or stolen credit cards, and in that case, it would be very appropriate for that person not to have the tools of his former trade available.
Is there any further debate?
Question.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 141, Judiciary, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
34 yeas, 2 nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill 141, Judiciary, has passed the House.
Representative Wallace?
Yes, I'd like to have reconsideration on my vote on this bill.
Representative Wallace, would you be kind enough to withdraw your motion and wait until we have adopted the
I withdraw my motion.
Thank you. Representative Clarkson?
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on final passage of Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill 141 be considered the roll call on the effective date clause.
Are there any objections to the adoption of the effective date clause? Hearing none, the effective date clause has been adopted. We do have a letter of intent. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, the letter of intent from the Judiciary Committee appears on page 821 of the journal. I move and ask unanimous consent that the letter of intent be approved.
Are there any objections to the letter of intent Judiciary being adopted? Hearing none, the letter of intent has been adopted. Representative Wallace.
Reconsideration on my vote on HB 141.
Notice of reconsideration has been given on said bill. Would the clerk at this time please read the next item on today's calendar?
House Bill 141 by the rules. Excuse me. House Bill 281 by Schultz, an act relating to trapping cabin permits. The Committee on Resources has had the bill under consideration, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 281, Resources, with the same title, recommends it do pass. Report was signed by Mr. Schultz, Chairman, concurred in by Schultz, Herman, Cato, Jenkins, Pierce, Thompson, Sund, Wallace, and M.W. Miller. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Resources Committee substitute for House Bill 281 be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Are there any objections to the adoption of the committee substitute? Hearing none, the Resource Committee substitute has been adopted. Do we have any amendments before us?
Amendment number 1 by Porchot. Page 1, line 11. Delete shall after the word commissioner and insert the word may.
Representative Porchot.
Mr. Speaker, I'd move the amendment.
Hearing objections, proceed, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My understanding of the bill would complement the existing statute that I think the members have before them. That would be this: the existing statute dealing with trapping cabins is attached to the letter to Representative Schultz from Esther Wanneke, Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. It's my understanding that the bill is designed to address a problem that has been occurring with the use of existing trapping cabins that people have been using for trapping as opposed to new cabin construction. I also understand that the administration of these permits has tended to require perhaps a lot of additional and extraneous documentation that's been very difficult for people, especially in rural areas, to gather. And I'm completely sympathetic with that, and I think the provisions within the existing bill before us, contained in lines 16 through 19, spell out some very good specific criteria under which use of trapping cabins would be permitted, and I have no argument with that. However, my problem, Mr. Speaker, occurs in line 11, where we do dictate, mandate that the commissioner shall issue a permit to an individual for trapping uses. I think that there could very well be cases where there would be other land uses and other potential conflicts in an area relative to use of a particular cabin, and that I believe that the commissioner should be afforded more discretion in on a case-by-case basis in issuing these permits. I think if under the amendment, if we would change that shall to may, that would still be clear direction for the commissioner to issue permits for the bona fide trappers who have been using these cabins and would allow the trappers to come in with the signed statement from the Fish and Game Advisory Chairman as put forth under the bill. I think, and I call your attention to the letter from Commissioner Wanneke on page 2, and I just briefly quote, if the committee decides to pass out a bill on trapping cabin permits, I hope the permitting action will be at the discretion of the department and not mandatory. It would not serve any good land management purposes to require issuance of any type of permit, particularly one that may last 10 years or more without regard to other land management concerns. With that, Mr. Speaker, I would urge adoption of this amendment.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm opposed to that amendment. That's exactly the problem, is the reasons that he pointed out there to pass it. The problem with present time is that DNR does have the regulations, and they have, and this is primarily only for existing trapping cabins built by people with no state money or anything else that they used for trapping. Under the present regulations adopted by DNR and the trapping cabin construction permit, the people that are applying for cabins to use those cabins for trapping have to go through the same thing year after year. They have to approve, they have to have proof of regular use of established trap line, tax returns claiming income from furs, receipts from fur buyers showing date, quantity, and type, receipts of fur tanning, Alaska Department of Fish and Game Biology Protection Officers statements, sealing certificates, supplementary proof they have to have, air charter receipts for travel to remote portions of the trap line, statements by witnesses, etc. All these things have to take place at the present time before a person can get a trapping permit. Who is in the best position in the state to make a decision as to who should get a trapping cabin permit? The local advisory boards. The Fish and Game, Department of Fish and Game will have an opportunity. The local fish biologist, Fish and Game Department person will have an opportunity to be there to provide input. Once, all I'm saying is that once it has been determined by the local advisory boards that this person has in fact, and it says right in the bill, that they're going to have to statutorily abide by these. The applicant had used the cabin on a regular basis for trapping before August 1st of 1984, and the past, present, and intended use of the cabin is for temporary shelter while trapping. And once the advisory board has signed off on it, I believe that it is imperative that the department issue a permit to that person without jumping through a whole bunch of unnecessary bureaucratic regulations to get a trapping permit in this area. So I would encourage the body to vote no.
Any further debate on amendment number one? Representative Sund.
Mr. Speaker, I'm going to speak in favor of the amendment basically on the philosophy that I think this is a land management issue and the word shall should be may instead of shall. The commissioner should have the discretion in this case. I think the evidence of a notarized statement signed by the chairman of the local advisory committee should carry a great deal of weight in the decision, but I think the decision should be in the discretion of the Department of Natural Resources and should not be mandated upon the Department of Natural Resources by a statement from somebody who's the head of a Fish and Game Advisory Board.
Representative Schultz.
Again, Mr. Speaker, if there's areas of dispute, the local people and the local advisory boards will take care of that. The commissioner should not be in a position to be making judgments as to whether or not these people, in fact, have used this for trapping cabin, who built it or whatever. If it is a valid trapping cabin, that should be left at the local level. They should be making the determination and passing their recommendation on to the commissioner, and then that's enough paperwork on it, issue the permit. If a problem arises out of it, then it's going to be the local boards and the local people. They're going to have to be taken to task on it by the local people. Thank you.
Any further debate on amendment number one? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall amendment number one be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
22 yeas, 15 nays.
Amendment number one has been adopted. Would the clerk please read the next item, amendment?
Amendment number two. By Herman. Page 1, line 14. After committee, delete chairman.
Representative Herman.
Mr. Speaker, I have the amendment being duplicated if people want to wait.
Representative Herman, it's not necessary as long as it's on the clerk's desk and it's small enough and no one requests it.
I move the amendment and ask unanimous consent.
Okay. Hearing objection, Representative Herman. Do you care to proceed with your argument?
Mr. Speaker, if it's the intent that we want the
the local advisory committee to make the decision, then we should say that and not just the chairman of the local advisory committee.
Any further debate on amendment number two? Representative Schultz.
Mr. Speaker, I have no trouble with that amendment at all. The representative from wherever in the front row there already destroyed the bill, so this one is fine.
Are there any further objections to amendment number two? Hearing no objections, amendment number two has been adopted. Do we have any further amendments before us on this bill?
Not on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Resources Committee substitute for House Bill 281 as amended by the House be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Are there any objections to the advancement from second to third reading? Hearing no objections, would the clerk please read the bill for the third time?
Committee substitute for House Bill 281, Resources amended by the Resources Committee. An act relating to trapping cabin permits.
Is there any debate? Representative Maru.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise to speak against this bill. I don't think we should have permits at all. The land belongs to the people, not to the government, if I may remind you. The government is only the trustee of the land. I quote from the Alaska State Constitution, Article 8, Section 1. It is the policy of the state to encourage the settlement of its land, making it available for maximum use. Section 2, the legislature shall provide for the utilization, development, and conservation of all natural resources, including land, for the maximum benefit of its people. Section 5, the legislature may provide for facilities, improvements, to assure greater utilization, development, reclamation, and settlement of lands. I might remind you that a trapping cabin is certainly an improvement. Section 6, lands and interests therein, not used or intended exclusively for governmental purposes, constitute the state public domain and therefore belong to all of us. Section 9, the legislature may provide for the sale or grant of state lands. Section 16, no person shall be involuntarily divested of his right to his interest in lands or improvements affecting it. Now, if a person has a trapping cabin on state land, he certainly owns the state land as a member of the public, and therefore what we're trying to do, or what previous legislatures have tried to do, is to divest these people of their interest in this land without just compensation. I think this is wrong. If anything, what we should do is to grant 1 acre to everybody who has a trapping cabin. They've gone out in the woods, they've gone to a lot of trouble to build a cabin, they've used it, and I think we ought to grant them an acre of land, not require them to go to their local committee or to write a letter to the commissioner or anything else to get a permit for it.
Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I must say, admit my ignorance in the outdoor life, and I ask the prime sponsor if he would educate me a little bit. When I first looked at this bill, I thought it was kind of a special interest bill, and as I heard some of the debate, it seemed like it is for a specific group that lives off the land. And I was wondering if there is a definition for trapping versus hunting, because we have other people out there who are hunting just for the pleasure of hunting. And at what point, if there is a definition, do we separate trapping? Because it seems to me that you could trap a wolf or you can hunt a wolf, or you could trap other animals, other species. And is there a clarification to say at what time you are hunting or what time you are trapping? There's other people that want their hunting cabins or shacks or whatever they have on state land to be permissible. And I was wondering if this would open a door to that. I'm not necessarily against it. I just wonder if we are just taking care of one special interest group right now.
Representative Schultz.
Mr. Speaker, in many, many cases throughout the state, in many areas of the state, cabins that are built that were built primarily for trapping purposes are used by hunters during the hunting season to stay in overnight, et cetera. What this legislation speaks to is that a person that's trapping a cabin on or trapping on a regular basis, if they have a 50 or 100-mile trap line, they may at one point along the line have a cabin that they use for overnight. it's kind of an honor system that we're on, or that the people, the trappers have, that they honor one another as far as not crossing over and not trapping parallel to one another. There's conflicts that come up, but they're usually resolved one way or another before the trapping season is over with. We're just trying to get a system without the unnecessary red tape that presently exists within the Department of Natural Resources, a very easy way for trappers to get access to cabins that they have been using for years without being in violation of DNR and some of the laws. So that's what it's all about. Hunters use them also, but there's no permit required. Those cabins are there, those shelters are there, and the people just during hunting season. But trapping season, one permit used for one person so that they're the only ones that during the trapping season that should be using that cabin. There should only be one permit issued. And again, getting back to the point, who knows more about those kinds of issues and the problems associated with them than the local advisory boards?
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 281, Resources Amended, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
33 yeas, 3 nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill 281, Resources Amended, has passed the House. Representative Clarkson. House, please stand at ease. Would the House please come back to order? Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, because of the lateness of the hour and the desire to get through the calendar, I move and ask unanimous consent that Senate Bill 1, which is on today's calendar, be removed to rules.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, so ordered. Representative Kopanen.
I wish to serve notice of reconsideration of my vote on committee substitute for House Bill 281.
Okay, notice of reconsideration has been given. Okay. Would the clerk at this time please read the next item on today's calendar?
Excuse me. We had committee substitute for House Bill 126, Judiciary, before us, Mr. Speaker, and I have an amendment number 1.
That bill right now is before us in third reading.
Yes.
Representative Sund.
Mr. Speaker, I'd move that we go from third to second reading for the purpose of the specific amendment number 1.
Do I hear objections?
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Gruenberg.
I am going to object to the amendment on the merits. I think it deserves to be debated on the merit. Therefore, I'm not going to oppose the right of the member to move it back up.
Mm-hmm. Are there any objections? Removing committee substitute for House Bill 226 from third to second reading. Hearing no objections, we are in second reading for an amendment. Representative Sund.
Mr. Speaker, I'd move amendment number 1 and ask for unanimous consent.
Proceed, Representative Sund.
Mr. Point Speaker, of order, I apologize to the members on the floor. I was absent in the Judiciary Committee when this bill came through.
Representative Sun, there's been a point of order. Representative Maru, state your point of order.
Mr. Speaker, I believe you said 226, and I think we're considering 126.
Well, if I said 226, I certainly meant 126.
Thank you, sir.
But I'm beginning to see double.
Mr. Speaker, thank you. This amendment, paragraph 5, the amendment is to delete paragraph 5. The first notes on line 22 would be to put a period after the word may and delete the colon or the or and then delete the rest of the paragraph. This paragraph was added in the Judiciary Committee. And again, I apologize, I missed that meeting. But my basic argument here is if it isn't broken, don't fix it. And I think there's been a case made for oil and gas leases. But in this situation, dealing with the rest of real property in the state, domestic corporations, domestic limited partnerships, there's adequate protection in the existing statutes under the fraud section, registration of persons, registration of securities, unlawful representation, and civil liability sections that all apply to those cases anyway. That's my number one argument. The second argument is that the language in lines 26 and 27 I don't think make good drafting, where you can say this paragraph may be exercised only when the exercise is not inconsistent with the Constitution. You're asking some bureaucrats and that to make a case-by-case decision every time to go look at the Constitution and figure out what to do. And I would move for the adoption of the amendment.
Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The fifth provision in here was added as a result of problems that are occurring in other states, and they may very well occur in Alaska. We're dealing with a statute here that is designed to protect investors against fraudulent schemes in this state. You may have a fraudulent scheme that involves a parcel of real property or an interest in real property that's not technically a mining right or an oil and gas right. It may be, for example, a timber right. It may be any other scheme involving the fraudulent use of Alaska real estate. Similarly, with respect to an Alaskan corporation or an Alaskan limited partnership, we have an interest in this state as the state legislature, the protector of Alaska, to make certain that our assets, our corporations, our limited partnerships are not used for fraudulent purposes. We're dealing with the statute. We're dealing with it once. This is a fact that has come before a number of state legislatures. We're simply bringing Alaska into conformity with a number of other states. The phrase, when the exercise is not inconsistent with the Constitution of the state or of the United States, is designed to bring this statute into compliance with a recent U.S. Supreme Court case, the Mite Corporation case, which dealt with an Illinois takeover bid statute. And the Interstate Commerce Clause proscribes the use of these types of statutes when there is no substantial relationship between the fraud and the state. This kind of language has precedent. It is found in the California Code of Civil Procedure in its long-arm statute. This is, in effect, a mini long-arm statute, giving the Division of Commerce, the Department of Commerce, Division of Banking and Securities, and the Attorney General jurisdiction over certain types of fraudulent transactions. It is highly appropriate, and it has been the law of the state of California for approximately 10 or 15 years now, and has a lot of precedent behind it. I urge the amendment be defeated.
Any further debate on amendment number one? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall amendment number one be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Will the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? The clerk tally the board.
11 yeas, 25 nays.
Amendment number one has failed adoption. We are now back to third reading on the bill. Is there any further debate? You're ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 126 Judiciary pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
36 yeas, no nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill 126 Judiciary has passed the House. Still under the consideration of the daily calendar, I believe we have some final action on a citation or two.
No.
Evidently not. We are now under unfinished business. Any unfinished business that come before this body? Announcements of standing committees or special committees. Representative Miller.
Speaker, remind members of the Judiciary Committee that both today and tomorrow our meetings will start at 1:15. And, of course, today we're talking about obstructions hindering hunting and fishing, and also that's House Bill 31 and also House Bill 218, ethics. But the meeting for Judiciary will be at 1:15, and I would ask members to be prompt.
Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I I think this may be appropriate under unfinished business, rather than announcements. If so, I ask we go back up to unfinished business.
Are there any objections to going back up the calendar? Proceed.
On behalf of the Hess Committee, I would like to waive referral of a particular bill. Should that be under unfinished business?
Proceed, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Committee substitute for Senate Bill 140, Hess amended, which is an act by the senator from Sitka entitled An Act Relating to the Rights of the Terminally Ill and Providing for an Effective Date. That has been referred to the Hess Committee, and it will go to Judiciary Committee. Judiciary Committee is presently considering a companion House bill by the majority leader of this House. And we have secured the consent of all members of the Hess Committee for this waiver, and I would request unanimous consent for that, and then I do have an announcement.
Are there any objections to waiving the bill out of Hess to Judiciary? Hearing none, so ordered.
May I make an announcement, Mr. Speaker?
Proceed, Representative.
Thank you. On Friday of this week, as well as House Bill 334 concerning asbestos in public buildings that we'll be working on, we'll also carry over a bill we dealt with yesterday, which deals with licensing of midwives. That's House Bill 362, both for the Friday calendar this week in Hess.
Any further committee announcements? General announcements? This brings us, Representative Pinyalberry.
Mr. Speaker, I would call the body's attention that in about 8 minutes from now, a very wonderful person who's a member of the other body is speaking to the Republican Club at the Baranoff Hotel, Senator Edna Armstrong DeVries.
Do we have any further announcements? This brings us to special orders. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I request the privilege of the floor to speak on the longevity bonus issue.
Are there any objections?